It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're broadcasting up here on Signal Hill, where it's 34 degrees under overcast skies, a few breaks in the clouds. Wind speeds are calm out at the airport, and they're calling for a 50% chance of snow. Mostly cloudy skies today with a high near 36. East winds 10, becoming light and northeast this afternoon. Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low of 24, northwest winds to 10, and sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 31 and northwest winds to 15, gusting to 25 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, COVID-19 cases have increased sharply in Kodiak. We have the numbers. APV rules are coming up. And four University of Alaska students are suing the state government in an attempt to save a fund that pays for scholarships. That plus heavy snow in the southeast after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Face the truth, don't bury it. President Biden's overarching message as he looks back at the baseless claims of election fraud that led a mob of Trump supporters to swarm the U.S. Capitol 1 year ago today.
Those who stormed this Capitol, and those who instigated and incited, and those who called on them to do so, held a dagger at the throat of America, at American democracy.
In a speech from the People's House, President Biden unleashed searing remarks about former President Donald Trump and loyalists who he says are perpetuating the big lie at the expense of the nation's democracy. As NPR Scott Detrow reports, Biden repeatedly called his predecessor out without once mentioning his name.
In his first year in the White House, Biden, by and large, ignored the daily attacks on the 2020 election coming from Donald Trump. Standing in Statuary Hall on the anniversary of the Capitol attack, Biden shifted course. Biden said the attack on the Capitol and ongoing efforts from many Republicans to undermine the 2020 election all stem from what Biden called a web of lies coming from Trump.
He's done so because he values power over principle, because he sees his own interest is more important than his country's interest, than America's interest.
Biden said Trump can't accept he lost and warned that the U.S. remains at an inflection point over the future of democracy. Scott Detrow, NPR News, Washington.
Meanwhile, lawmakers remain at an impasse over election and voting rights legislation in Congress, as NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
The importance of the right to vote. It's something that we heard Vice President Harris mention, urging the Senate to pass legislation to protect the right to vote. And it's something that we heard Biden refer to as well. And as the justice correspondent, I will say it's something that we hear frequently from senior officials at the Justice Department, and we've seen in actions from the Justice Department, the importance to defend access to the ballot and the right to vote in this country is seen as fundamental and something that needs to be defended.
Ryan Lucas reporting. Another round of powerful winter storms is grinding travel to a halt in parts of the Pacific Northwest. Here's NPR's Kirk Sigler.
A busy stretch of Interstate 84 east of Portland in the Columbia River Gorge has been closed for days, stranding travelers and truckers in deep snow. It's just one of many highways that have closed in the region. At lower elevations, this latest milder winter storm off the Pacific is causing heavy rain on existing snow, prompting flooding concerns. The region is coming off one of its driest and hottest summers on record, and in some wildfire-scarred mountains where the soils are charred and unstable, there's renewed threat of mudslides. At higher elevations in parts of Washington, Idaho, and Montana, forecasters say another foot of snow is possible before things start to dry out by the end of the week. Kirk Sigler, NPR News, Boise.
This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The COVID-19 situation in Kodiak has taken a turn for the worse. KMXT's Dylan Simard has the latest.
According to the Emergency Operations Center's weekly COVID update, 227 new cases were reported for the Kodiak Island borough in the last week. 256 of those cases are considered active and include one hospitalization. Mike Tvangi is the director of the Emergency Services Council. He says that while this event doesn't merit reintroducing the mask mandate, it does lend to greater vigilance.
If this doesn't send a shot across the bow, I don't know what will. We need to be careful. We need to keep our distance and wear a mask whenever we're around people. This Omicron virus is very contagious, as we've heard multiple times, and just to protect one's family and the workforce in our community is critical at this point.
The spike comes as Kodiak High School students transition to remote learning Wednesday through the end of the week. School officials cited local case numbers as the cause. This week's public meetings for both borough and the city were canceled. A joint work session between the borough and city council scheduled for tonight was also canceled, and the Kodiak Board of Education pushed its meeting back a week. Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center also moved to orange status on Wednesday, indicating a higher level of visitor restrictions. Carl Hertz, chief executive of Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center, says that staffing at the hospital is a big factor in the level change.
However, based on staffing need, some of the outpatient services might be impacted, so you might have to wait a little extra for an outpatient x-ray or lab or different things like that.
According to Hertz, there are things the public can do to prevent the worst outcome at the hospital.
We just want folks to know that we are seeing a surge on the island. Please be mindful when you're out and about the public. Please get vaccinated, wash your hands, social distance, and mask, and maybe consider limiting your visits to loved ones in the hospital until we get through this latest surge.
The high local case numbers come amidst spiking coronavirus cases around the country, largely driven by the Omicron variant. Local health officials don't test for specific variants in Kodiak, although the Omicron variant was detected in Alaska before the holidays. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
All-purpose vehicles like off-road side-by-sides and all-terrain vehicles can legally travel Alaskan roadways now. Last fall, the governor's office announced the relaxed regulations, and they went into effect this past weekend. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, those changes might be short-lived on parts of Kodiak Island.
Kodiak City Council will have a first reading next week of a draft ordinance to limit APV use within city limits.
It is a very straightforward and simple ordinance.
That's Kodiak Mayor Pat Branson.
On keeping the rules for ATVs off city limit roads as they are now. And that's the recommendation from the Police Chiefs Association, State Association, and one that's coming forward being recommended by our police chief as well.
The new rules might work for other smaller, more rural areas, but Branson says allowing APVs to merge with traffic somewhere like Mill Bay Road, which connects downtown to Safeway in a 35-mile-per-hour zone, could be dangerous for drivers. The rule change rolled out over the weekend automatically applies to cities across the state, allowing APVs on roads 45 miles per hour and under. Branson says communities should have been given the option to opt in instead of drafting ordinances opting out of the loosened regulations.
I've heard both sides of the story from different constituents, but the most important thing for me is we don't put a policy in place, have some tragic event occur, and then try and change the policy.
Meantime, the Kodiak Police Department reminds residents that the new rules don't mean it's open season for APVs. That's an important clarification, says Kodiak Police Department Public Information Officer Francis De La Fuente.
January 1 is only the start when you can start registering your vehicle. You can't use your ATV right off the bat January 1st. If you get the registration from DMV, then now you have to follow the rules of the road.
In short,
you have to drive it like a car, basically.
That means turn signals, functioning headlights, tail and brake lights, and front and rear license plates. Drivers will need a valid driver's license and proof of insurance, according to the new rules. And passengers will also have to wear helmets. There's guidelines for seatbelts, too. Mayor Branson says a first reading of the draft ordinance restricting APV use will be on January 13th, and any new rule change would only apply to streets within Kodiak city limits. A public hearing and second reading of the order is set for January 27th. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
Four University of Alaska students are suing the state government in an attempt to maintain a fund that pays for scholarships. The Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund has been under threat of being emptied of more than $400 million as a result of legislative budget fights. It pays for Alaska Performance Scholarships, need-based Alaska education grants, and the state program for medical students known as WAMI. Riley Von Borstel of Seward is one of the students who sued. She's the student body president at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and she says the scholarships are essential for her and other students.
If this funding weren't available to students anymore, I think the University of Alaska system would see a significant decline in enrollment amongst Alaskan students. I think many of them would decide not to attend school in Alaska if this funding weren't available.
According to Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration, the money in the fund must be swept into a state savings account if three-quarters of each legislative chamber doesn't vote each year to maintain the funding. And that vote failed last year. Another lawsuit successfully protected the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund, which also has been threatened by legislative disputes. That fund pays to lower the cost of electricity in high-cost rural areas. In the new lawsuit, lawyers for both sides jointly asked that a judge hear arguments in the case quickly and issue a ruling by February 22nd, leaving time for an appeal and for the legislature to take the ruling into account in their budget. Dunleavy said in a statement that he supports funding the scholarships. University of Alaska Interim President Pat Pitney wrote in a letter to students that the university supports the lawsuit. Winter weather is in full effect across Alaska, but unusually high snow accumulation is severely testing southeast. Usually some snow melts between the storms, but as KTOO's Claire Stremple reports, that's not happening this winter.
Long icicles dangle under a block of snow piled on top of Stan Savlin's home in Juneau's Lemon Creek neighborhood. Savlin and his son knocked a piano-sized chunk of snow and ice off his roof with a steel bar this week.
At least 500 pounds.
He says warming from the attic created an ice dam that blocked the snow from sliding off his metal roof. He estimates more than 3 feet of ice and snow teetered above his fuel tank. So he took matters into his own hands.
So we put some protection by the oil tank, and it basically bounced off the protection and then bounced out and hit me in the leg and knocked me down. But we were expecting, I mean, we were trying to knock it down, and we accomplished our goal, but kind of got caught in the crossfire a little bit.
Savlin brushed off concern about his injury, but was noticeably limping. Now he advises caution if you have a dangerous amount of snow. He says anything that can keep you off the roof is probably a good idea, like a snow rake. Or he's also seen roofers advertising snow removal.
I think they said like a 50 cents a square foot, so 1,000 square feet would be $500 to clean your roof, but could be well worth it.
Down the road in Mendenhall Valley, friends and neighbors started calling Nate Geary to ask about the weight of snow load on their houses. He's an engineer for the state. And since he has the safety equipment on hand, Geary scaled his roof and cut out a 1 foot block of snow.
Yeah, and so then I just put that into a container and weighed it on a bathroom scale.
The snow block from his roof weighed 42 pounds, getting pretty close to the limit of what his roof can support. His block was nearly 3 feet thick. At that point, he recommends getting up there and shoveling it off, if you can do it safely.
At a minimum, I think people should use a snow rake to clear the overhangs of the roof, since that's the weakest part of the structure.
Juneau City Manager Rory Watt says this has been the most intense snow pileup in his 3 decades in Juneau, but he doesn't want people to panic about snow on their rooftops.
I would generally caution people to be careful and not overreact.
He says if there are signs that the roof is taking too much weight, people might want to shovel it off, but...
But I also worry about people climbing on their roofs in, 0-degree weather and high winds.
He says that city code is for roofs to withstand 50 pounds per square foot, but old code was 40 pounds per square foot. He says most buildings are probably built to that lower rating, and buildings with flat roofs are especially susceptible. It's not just Juneau laboring under heavy snow. Yakutat residents teamed up to clear the school roof this week, and Haines' Avalanche Center warned that local snowpack weighed up to 57 pounds per foot and could crush structures. National Weather Service meteorologist Greg Spahn says this isn't the snowiest winter Southeast Alaska has ever seen, though snow accumulations at the Juneau Airport are nearly double the average for this time of year.
What's made this winter in part stand out in so many places is that the snow hasn't been able to melt after each system.
A system is just a storm.
So we have one system, it drops snow, a lot of that snow stays, another system drops snow on top of that, and so on and so forth, until eventually all that accumulated snow starts to become a real problem and a real hassle.
That's what's happening this week. Juneau is running out of snow storage downtown and has blown through its snow removal budget already, according to the borough. Another significant snowstorm is coming this weekend, after several days of truly frigid temperatures. Spahn says the good news is that temperatures may bounce back up above freezing after that. But more snow and warming temperatures could add even more weight on rooftops. With reporting from Rasha McChesney, I'm Claire Strimple for KTOO.
Juneau election officials had to reject more than 700 ballots they received in the October municipal election. Some ballots will inevitably be rejected in almost any election by mail because of human error, missed deadlines, or other problems. But KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports that issues with the U.S. Postal Service and local verification requirements led to the extraordinarily high rejection rate in Juneau last year.
First off, the final tallies for all seven contests in Juneau's October election were too lopsided for the rejected ballots to change any outcomes. But for voters, or rather attempted voters like Bria Mitchell, it still stings.
So I voted in the election my very first time with a mail-in ballot, filled it out, double-checked it. I dropped it in the ballot box.
She says she's voted in almost every election she's been eligible for over the last 20-some years.
Probably a couple weeks later, I got a letter saying that my signature didn't match. Can I please fill out this, that, and this?
That's what election officials call a cure letter. These letters flag a disqualifying problem with a ballot and offer the recipient options to fix it. In Mitchell's case, a pair of election workers trained in signature verification decided her signature on her ballot envelope didn't match the one on file with the State Division of Elections. Mitchell says she did the corrective paperwork and mailed it off. After the election was certified, she got another letter that said her ballot wasn't counted because her signatures didn't match. It's not clear from the second letter if there was a problem with her most recent paperwork or if election officials just didn't get it in time.
Made me feel pretty irritated. What I really wanted to know was how many other people got the letter. You know, like of the chunk of voters in Juneau, how many people didn't count? That, you know, 10%, 1%?
City Clerk Beth McEwen heads up Juneau's local elections. Data she provided shows election workers rejected about 8% of ballots.
Very highly disappointing for both the voters and for our office.
She broke down why each of those 700-plus ballots was rejected. A handful came from ineligible voters. For example, people registered to vote in another community. A few people mailed in empty envelopes. About half were rejected because of a failure with the U.S. Postal Service. They showed up after Election Day without a postmark. This happened to some ballots in the 2020 election, when voters paid their own postage in the city's first election conducted by mail. But McEwen says it was a much bigger issue in 2021.
Because our assembly gave us direction that they wanted us to pay for the return ballots this year, we changed the envelope so that it was business reply mail.
That type of prepaid postage normally is not postmarked. However, a Postal Service spokesperson says there's been a long-standing policy to postmark election mail regardless of the type of postage on it, specifically because so many election laws rely on them. What actually happened was some ballots got postmarked, a lot didn't.
But we didn't learn that until after the fact.
McEwen says she was in touch with local Postal Service officials before the election and didn't expect it to be a problem. A Postal Service spokesperson didn't comment on the particulars of what went wrong. McEwen and the Postal Service say they're working together again to make sure the 2022 election goes more smoothly. That still leaves another big bucket of 323 rejected ballots that were like Bria Mitchell's, ballots that had a problem with the voter's signature or the piece of personal information used to confirm their identity. For comparison, election officials rejected about as many ballots statewide for those reasons in the 2020 general election, a tiny fraction of all ballots cast. State election workers don't have to compare signatures with the signature on file. For local elections, the Juneau Assembly added that requirement before the city's first election by mail in 2020. It's not clear why these were bigger problems in the city's second one. A state elections spokesperson says voters can request copies of documents with their reference signature and update it with a registration form or an absentee ballot application. Bria Mitchell says next time, she just plans to vote in person.
I mean, I'm not like bitter or anything, but I wouldn't vote like that again.
McEwen says she has some ideas to reduce the number of ballots rejected, like making more ballot drop boxes available. Other proposed election changes will eventually go to the Juneau Assembly for consideration. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors, actors, musicians, artists, and creative minds. The best-selling manual for job hunters and career changers is What Color Is Your Parachute? Author Dick Bowles has painstakingly rewritten it every year for four decades. And the latest edition takes a fresh approach. Dick Bowles.
I decided to try to update it every year because I realized that the whole job hunting scene keeps changing, and so does the job market. What's changed is the technologies. Job hunting or career change is hard driven by the current technologies. If the current technologies are newspapers, you will find the vacancies that employers have being advertised in the newspapers. If the current technology is the internet, you will find their vacancies being advertised on the internet. So those are the kinds of things that have tended to change the outward appearances, while the inner essence of the job hunter career change has remained the same. The big thing that I learned this year was that people wanted more guidance about how to use the social media. So in the 2014 edition, I spend much more time, for example, on LinkedIn, which I call the Swiss Army knife of job hunters. I have four or five pages in the book telling them exactly how to use the LinkedIn with more efficiency and more competency. So I literally sat down and rewrote the book.
Dick Bowles, he's updated his best-selling book, What Color Is Your Parachute, every year since it first came out. There's more online, insightdailyradio.org.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the sixth day of January, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:50. It will set again at 4:41. That will give us 6 hours and 51 minutes of daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 18 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 46, set in 1979, and a record low was 2, set in 2020. Currently 34 degrees outside under overcast skies, 50% chance of snow today with mostly cloudy skies, a high near 36, and east winds to 10, turning to the northeast this afternoon. Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 24, and northwest winds to 10, and sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 31, northwest winds to 15, gusting to 25. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 4:15 p.m. That will be a 9.4-foot tide. Our next low tide will be a minus tide at 10:54 p.m., minus 8/10 of a foot. And our high tide for tomorrow morning early on the east side will happen at 5:33 a.m. and be an 8-foot tide. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 4:45 this afternoon. That will be a 14.3-foot tide. Your next low tide will be minus tide as well, 11:26 p.m., minus 1 foot in Larson Bay. That'll be followed by a high tide tomorrow morning at 5:53 a.m. of 13.4 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Friday. East winds to 30 today, should come down to 15 this afternoon.
seas to 14 feet, coming down to 10 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, northwest 20, seas to 9 feet. Friday night, northwest 20, seas to 7 feet. But for Saturday on our east side, northeast 40, seas to 19 feet. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning for today. Northeast 35, diminishing to 25 this afternoon in the Shelikof. Seas to 9 feet, should come down to 6 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, variable 10, becoming northeast 30 tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 2 feet, building to 6 feet tomorrow afternoon. For Friday night in the Shelikof, northeast 30, seas to 9 feet. And Saturday through Sunday on our west side, northeast 45, seas to 16 feet. Chiniac and Marmot Bays. For Chiniac Bay, east winds to 20 knots this morning, become variable less than 10 this afternoon, seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 20, seas to 4 feet. Friday night, north 20, seas to 4 feet. And Saturday, northeast 35, seas to 14 feet in Chiniac Bay. Kodiak Arts Council is planning an international guitar night next Wednesday. Four guitar luminaries will showcase the diversity of their instruments. That's happening next Wednesday, January 12th at 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. For tickets, just go to the Arts Council website. That's at www.kodiakarts.org. The Kodiak History Museum's new exhibit, Making History Day by Day, Kodiak, Our Stories and the COVID-19 Pandemic, is now on view at the Kodiak Public Library. The exhibit is available at no cost to the public through January 19th. It's a reflection on the COVID experience in Kodiak. The exhibit features art, stories, photos, and more from you. Contact the curator, Lynn Walker, at curator@kodiakhistorymuseum.org with any questions. The Kodiak History Museum, Kodiak Arts Council, and the City of Kodiak are inviting artists to submit qualifications to design an outdoor public art installation in downtown Kodiak as part of the Kodiak Asphalt Art Initiative. The artwork will be located in an area near the ferry terminal parking lot, including nearby crosswalks and sidewalks, connecting the terminal and the visitor center with the museum district. The primary goal for the project is to revitalize an underutilized public space, creating a pedestrian plaza for visitors and locals alike to enjoy. The artist submission deadline is January 21st. Complete details of the project and the artist submissions process can be found at the Kodiak Arts Council website. That's at www.kodiakarts.org. Magazines are now available through the Alaska Digital Library at the Kodiak Public Library by using the Libby app, and they may be borrowed like an ebook. Over 3,000 magazines are available. All you need is your library card and a PIN to check them out. Call or stop by the library to learn more about this free service. Curbside service and home delivery are still available for library patrons. Place holds on materials from your device, and then you can pick them up curbside when the library is open, anytime between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. The library is open 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Masks are recommended while in the building. Kodiak Fish and Game Advisory Committee are having an election and meeting. The Kodiak AC will hold a public meeting in the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Conference Room at 351 Research Court on Monday, January 10th, that's next Monday, 2022, at 5:30 p.m. The purpose of this meeting is to hold elections for members and officers and to address Board of Fisheries shellfish proposals. The meeting is open to the public. All residents of the area who attend the meeting and are of legal voting age may make nominations and vote on committee membership. The teleconference number is this, 1-800-504-8071. Your access code, 8425142. And again, that's Monday, January 10th, 2020, 5:30 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20 and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.